So when you got to Yale, I read in your class book that you were in the political union as well as the president of the Italian Society. And what was it like for you being at Yale?
Well, Yale was in the 20s. Yale began a program to broaden its scholar base, its student base, and as one of the premier American universities to try to be representative of the whole American population, a program of scholarships in all of the states, and certainly this program in Connecticut was especially big. I mean, Connecticut, the scholarships to Yale were very, very special. And then they worked out this whole system of jobs so that you could earn your room and board, the scholarship. If you were, good, you'd get full tuition scholarship. And then you'd work for your room and board. The system was structured. It wasn't just, it's not the individual going out and finding work. I mean, Yale did it for you. They had this, in freshman year, this at the same time was happening as Yale with the Harkness money, which came from the oil millionaires. The whole system of the college is an imitation of the British college system, but not exactly the residential colleges. But this was reserved for the upperclassmen. The theory was that the freshmen would all be living on the old campus, all together as a unit, and they'd all eat together as a unit. And therefore, of necessity, the socialization would be the freshmen as units. Then, after that, the last 3 years, you'd be sent to the residential, to live in the residential colleges, and each of the residential colleges was a social unit as well as an educational unit with library and dining hall. And the bursary students, bursary jobs were after your first year. Your first year, the board and room jobs were waiting on table or part of it. I mean, washing glasses or washing dishes on the dishwasher, on the big machines. And I did both waiting and classroom jobs. That was my job first year. Anyway, what was referred to in those days as the white shoe boys. These people came from the prep schools. By my time, I would think that, again, I don't have the exact statistic, but I'd be surprised if it were under one-third of the class, high school students. It's no longer... the prep school boys, by now, I imagine it's the most 90% is high school. But then we were in that transition stage where Yale was making a real effort to be representative of America, not only from the point of view of democracy, but from the point of view of the longevity of the institution that after all, you're dealing with intelligence and... you're best served by getting the most intelligent people in the population to come, because that helps the preservation of the university as an institution over the years. It's all worked together, and obviously I was in part of that transition stage, a stage that was tremendously accelerated by the GI Bill in World War II, of course. GI Bill was a fantastic educational revolution for the United States. I'm sure there have been many books, I don't know whether any books were totally developed, totally addressed that, but they certainly, many, many, many writers addressed that, historians, sociologists, and so forth. But Yale and I guess Harvard too and Princeton, they'd already started on this path, because even before the Depression, but the Depression must have been an accelerant, And I went there in 38, so I was the beneficiary of all those movements, you know.
Mm-hmm. So did you, how did it feel being there? Did it feel?
Well, at Yale, when I went, you had a group of homebodies that didn't live on the campus. They were New Haveners, even some as far away as, it's Westport. My brother, when he came 2 years later, he commuted the first year, you know. And they were a kind of a separate group, the commuters. They didn't participate in this social world. It took money. And I gravitated, since a lot of them, since New Haven was an Italian city in those days, I certainly gravitated toward that group socially. Although living on campus, I also had other social contacts. But definitely, the commuters were kind of a, well, not exactly a subclass, but they weren't the aristocracy of the college student world. Mm-hmm. And I tended to socialize more with the people who weren't the aristocracy, although, as I say, I still had privileges. Like one of the things about the college system then was that you could you could eat, I don't know, once or twice a week at any of the colleges if you had friends. I mean, and so I did that fairly regularly. As a matter of fact, I had one particular boy, now a doctor out, I think, in Barstow, California, Bakersfield, California. He must be retired now, 76 or 77. Now, I used to shepherd Palitz, Jewish boy from New York. His father was, I think, a dentist in New York. And so and I had other colleges I'd go to. I had, the two boys who came from Westport, who came to Yale, whose father was a urologist at Cornell, the medical school that's associated with Cornell in New York. He was a professor there, an adjunct professor, as well as having a urology practice in New York City, living in Westport. So those boys were at another college. I exchanged meals with them. You know, I mean, that kind of thing was the Yale, you know, what most of the people thought Yale was at that time. And so I certainly socialized there, but I was equally comfortable with those contacts. They weren't, you know, the big men on campus contacts. Even my socialization with that kind of, or with them, Ed Lowe, for instance, he was at Berkeley, and he was from Philadelphia, so I'd socialize with him. But again, we weren't, you know, the people who had been the waiters in Commons, because we were on scholarships. You know, we were a separate part of the Yale society, there's no question of that. But plus that, I had the other angle of the affinity with the New Haven group, the commuter group, which was different in law school after the war. In law school, there weren't that kind of social distinctions. Of course, the war was a great leveler, too, I must say, But the fact of the law school, you know, the graduate school, was you were there because presumably Yale's reputation and Yale's selection process, even with World War II, was very careful, so that you were dealing with you know, the first probably. Certainly the 90th percentile or better American intelligence, you know. So and intelligence and performance was much more valued than with social station. Of course, in law school, I also was the leader of the liberal organization of World War II veterans, the American Veterans Committee. Mm. And that was, I became president of the Connecticut groups of the American Veterans Committee. And they had groups in Hartford and groups in New Haven that I remember. All the group at Bridgeport had a group. I don't remember whether Eastern Connecticut, whether New London had one or not. I don't think they did. But that was in my law school years, and that was both organizational and social. It was different from the college. A totally different social experience. You had much more of a unified interest in the law school. Not that, you know, people were not exactly grinds, only grinds. I mean, people got drawn to social, that was part of law school too, but it was a different social ambience from what it had been in college. Partly because it was the law school, the graduate school, and the emphasis on the on intelligence, plus the war, which again, you know, the kind of dynamic that World War II created. But back, you go ahead. What's the next one?
Well, so were you with Ed Logue in the Labor Party as well? Or?
I was in the Labor Party, the political union, right. And it was kind of strange. William Eldred Jackson, whose father was on the Supreme Court at that time, he was in the class of 1941. We were in the class of 1942. He was not in the Labor Party. And in the election of 1940, there was a great struggle in the political union, reflecting, of course, where Yale was politically then, or the Yale student body, was whether they should support Wilkie, which I think they did. Kingman Brewster was also the class of 41. He eventually became president of Yale after going to Harvard Law School and teaching law at Harvard. And I think they were in, I forget the name of their party, I think they called it the Liberal Party. Yeah, we were the Labor Party, that was the Liberal Party, then they had a Conservative Party. I guess at the invitation of the a little bit of the British Parliament, where all this, rather than the American Democrats and Republicans. But you know, that was the, I remember the 1940 election, Yale, there was a riot, and there were Yale students, when Wilkie came to town to speak on the green. The town-gown rivalry then, of course, the town was all Roosevelt. But the Yale students were probably with more to drink than they should have, tipping over buses, or trolley cars, not buses. That was in 1940, in October 1940. You know. So that's obviously also a reflection of what happened in the political union. But the Labor Party was, there's no question, we were New Deal. I mean, that's kind of what we were. Yeah, Ed and I were in the Labor Party, that's right.
So that was different from your father's views, Tony?
Not necessarily. My father was a Republican because he was in Westport, but he was, you know, he was immigrant, he was liberal, you know, economically, you know, but he was, as far as Westport was concerned, he was a Republican, you know. Of course, his view of Roosevelt, they mainly didn't like Roosevelt, because Roosevelt made this speech about Italy when Italy ended the war against France. You know, that says no good. You know, he was still, I mean, he was American. On the other hand, you couldn't forget Italy, and he thought that Roosevelt was very harsh on Italy. And in the 1920s, the Italian communities of certainly the Northeast, probably true in California too, but I didn't know that. I wasn't there. They tended to support Mussolini. Only came with the coming of the war. I mean, after that, there was no question of their loyalty. I mean, they had sons in the army and whatnot. But they tended to support, I mean, the because of the love for the homeland, and Mussolini was making Italy, a power among the nations again. I mean, they tended to support Mussolini. But there was a schizophrenia about it. Mm. Now, obviously, the schizophrenia was resolved when the war came.